Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Personal Transformation. This I can say, well, is my 200th podcast, and I'm still here. But anyway, I have lots to cover today, lots of wonderful things today to talk about. I am ever so fortunate and honored to have Art Lockhart, the founder of The Gatehouse. I have him on here, actually, and just so you know, he was my very first guest ever, and now he's my 200th. And today we got lots to celebrate, not only for my 200th podcast, but more importantly, we're celebrating 23 years The Gatehouse has been in the community of the Greater Toronto Area, or Toronto, or Etobicoke, or Greater Etobicoke, as I always say. But we're here, and we're in a community strong, and it just keeps better and better. So without further ado, actually, before I go any further as well, I should point out that I've got Nick on my side here as well, and I've got Maria helping out as well on the other end. So we have lots of help here today and lots of faces helping us celebrate this moment in time as we are right now. So without further ado, I'd like to bring Art into the picture.
Glad to be here, Stuart.
Just, hey, Art.
It's wonderful to be here. It's thrilling. So thank you for this.
Absolute honor having you here. So the big thing, I guess, right off the bat, like this has been a crazy couple of years. And here we are. We're talking through the internet. And normally, if things had been so-called normal as they were before, we'd be meeting at the Gatehouse or we'd be meeting at some other place. Things are totally, totally, totally different. How is this working out for you now, having to do things this way?
It honestly, it feels a little awkward for me, a little bit off balance, because I like to, when I like being around people like you and Nicole, like it, I want to hug somebody. And so not being able to do that is kind of it just feels different in that way. Mm. And, but what is also interesting to me is how far reaching everything is now unfolding in terms of this technology that your podcast, all these podcasts, 200 podcasts, how many people you've reached out through this form of technology. So we really have to celebrate the technology and people such as yourselves and Nicola and Maria who put this together, who make it happen. Yeah. I'm in awe of that. So that's what I would say to that question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And you know, it's funny how it's kind of worked out. And I keep falling back to this. As it stands now, just because of social media and media being the way it is with the internet, we're actually able to serve and help more people.
Yeah.
And who would have thought that? I mean, with something that a lot of people, now, even people, I think of some of the old-timers, do not want this technology whatsoever at all and would rather just be personal and talk about it. But we're dealing with something like we're having to deal with on a global level as we are, and we're forced into something which we have no clue what we're doing, a lot of us, and had to figure it along the way, and it's actually turned out to be quite magical in a lot of ways, such as we're able to service and talk to a lot more people, not just here in the Greater Toronto Area, but internationally across Canada, mainly because that's who we look after. But it's incredible. It's just totally incredible. And it's kind of a really great milestone, too, for the Gatehouse as well, because being able to reach all these people, which we never thought able to reach before, which is totally awesome. So
absolutely.
Mm. We have facilitators as far away as BC and Nova Scotia now.
We do now, absolutely, yes. That's totally, totally awesome. So now we're here today. I'm going to actually kind of bring you back now to 23 years ago, actually, because we just passed our anniversary in June. Looking back now, what are your thoughts now looking back to the day when you opened up the house and you had everybody come in and – you know, it's your grand opening and you're going to start doing groups and all this come to fruition. Now, looking back on that moment, what would you say to yourself now, looking back at all, at this time? I won't say all that time, but this amount of time.
Oh, it's all that time. It's a great question. And the minute, just when you said that, what popped into my head as you were saying that was what happened was the day that we opened it in June, back in 1998, there were quite a number of people out in the front of the gatehouse, and there were microphones set up, and all the news people were there, and it was in wonderful commentaries by many, many people who spoke. But as it was happening, there was this one individual, and his name is Maurice, and he's quite happy that I would say his name. So Maurice was standing in the crowd out there, and after the ceremonies were formally completed, he came up and sort of tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "Hello, my name is Maurice," and I said, "Hello, my name is Arthur." And Maurice went on to say that he had actually he referred to it as living down on the rocks behind the gatehouse down at Lake Ontario. Mm. He was homeless. And he went on to say that he was homeless. The story unfolded, he had been horribly, horribly abused as a child. And that he couldn't understand how there were all these people standing on a main street, Lakeshore Boulevard West, streetcars going by, news people out there talking about childhood sexual abuse. He just couldn't, it just wasn't hard to process that whole thing. And so we talked a little bit longer, and I said something to the effect of, well, on Tuesday nights, we're going to be having a group for men to come in to sit down and talk. And he just looked aghast that that's not possible. And I said, "Well, yeah, it is. We're just going to sit in a circle and we're going to share stories. And we'll do more than that, but that's what the premise was." And he just couldn't believe that that was possible. But he showed up. And also what had happened, he'd been in and out of jail a few times. And again, this is something he has said in public. I'm not, again, saying anything that we haven't had in a public venue. So he had a look, like when you talk to him, he looked really stern and he was like this. And it turns out the reason he looked like that was he was missing his front teeth from all kinds of events in his life. So I joke around a lot, and so I was joking with him and so on, and he started to laugh. And I said, "That's a hell of a smile you got going on there." And we laughed about it. He said it was the first time in any setting where he was actually laughing out loud over a number of years because of not having any teeth. One of the other men sitting in the group doesn't say anything at this moment. He's kind of looking serious to me. A week later, the guy comes in. He's got a phone number. It's a dentist. One thing leads to another. Maurice has teeth. Maurice walks into another meeting that we have a couple of weeks later and is beaming with his teeth. Now, this is all back to opening the gatehouse. Okay, it's like I'm telling this story. Because the simple act of saying, "Come in and sit down, and you're going to be listened to," took on an amazing journey, not only for him, but for every one of us, in such a way that was so profound. So this was like June 1998, right? So somewhere in 2010 or 15, somewhere there, I get a phone call from a fellow out on the East Coast, and it's Maurice, and he phones and he says, "It's been a long time since we saw each other, but I want to let you know I'm back with my family." His son, and he reconnected with a son that he hadn't seen in, I don't know how long, I have no idea how long it was, but they were back together. I'm telling that story because when we say it opened on June 1998, and what does that feel like? What it feels like is how important it is to create a place and a process for a human being to have a chance to speak. to tell their truth, to tell their story. And so when I'm sitting here across from you and Nicola right now, like, that's what you're doing, Stuart. You're the facilitator of this. You're the one that's making this happen. And I just am in awe of that, of what you are doing. And I so am so happy that your voice is reaching out to people all over the world. That is a, what a gift you're bringing to the planet. So that's what's in my head right this minute. And I'm thinking if Maurice might, he might even listen in on this. Who knows? Maybe some strange way he'll connect or something. But just that moment. So thank you is what, I guess what it means is I want to say thank you to you. That was a long answer. I apologize.
No, that's quite all right. And you're welcome. I appreciate that. And the story of Maurice is a beautiful story as well. And thank you for sharing that. Many others hopefully will appreciate that as certainly as I do. Especially, I mean, I wasn't there when the house opened in '98, but I know from going there and doing what I do, you know, I think about that welcoming coming up those stairs, and it's such a scary place, or rather a scary thought about going in there. And the place is so welcoming when you come in and see the teddy bears going up the stairs, and four stairs are scary, but look what happens when you when you allow yourself to come in the door and let the process take happen and go through it. It can be a beautiful experience, and we get beautiful stories like you just shared with us along with this. So to me, that's so important, giving others hope that we can actually do something about ourselves and not stay stuck like we could have been or were or where this scenario may be. So over the years, you know, there's been lots of changes. I opened up with the internet. Now that's come a long way. Now I'm sure when you opened up in 1998, you had the internet, but it wasn't to the level that it is now. And the programs you offer are certainly not what they were when you first started in 1998. How, with the programs progressing as they are, have to this day, how is that for a process? What I mean by how is that for a process? How do you think the community handle that as a process from us evolving to what we are now? Is that kind of a...
That's a great question. And there's a couple of really key things in that question. One is when we were actually building the house, like really ripping it down and rebuilding the whole process, the building, it wasn't unusual for me to get a phone call or somebody would even leave a note in my windshield wiper concerned that they'd say, the notes went something like this. This is a place of child abuse and we don't want it here.
Wow.
That everybody's going to think that this neighborhood abuses their children. So there was, like in the beginning, while there was a tremendous amount of support, there was also the urban myths and the urban legends about abuse were there. So there was that kind of pushing through that process to share what we were really doing, what it meant to have a place that was visible for people to come and see and be part of. So that was one of the things that happened in the very beginnings as we're dealing with that. Another issue that surfaced right at the beginning, actually even before the house opened, was I was in a meeting with a group of people that were supporting the gatehouse. And they were looking at ways of creating funding for the gatehouse. And the programs hadn't started. You said in that question about the programs and the process that had evolved. The focus that many of the people wanted was, and rightfully so, to have focus on children. No doubt about that. Just what you do. However, in this one meeting, I said, and it'll be so great because we can have a program for adult males. And a couple of people in that meeting said, no, we cannot have programming for men here at the gatehouse because we know, and this is from people who had university degrees, saying that if you've been abused as a male child, that you were automatically by default going to be a male abuser when you grew up. And there was no way for them to be part of the Gatehouse. And the joke kind of, if I could even use that word at the time, was I have a bit of a hearing problem in my right ear. So I leaned into the group and I said, I just can't catch all of that. And so just sort of discarded that commentary and said, well, if you don't want to be part of this and you want to be part of the funding for this, that's your prerogative, but I'm sitting here to tell you, as a male, as someone who has been sexually abused as a child, that we're going to have a program for men who have had to hide the abuse that they have gone through in their life. And as you well know, the program was one of the first programs in Canada for adult males to come forward. And in fact, there was the hosting collaboration with the Gatehouse and the Men's Project in Ottawa back in the early 90s. We created that. The Gatehouse created that in the very beginning. And to this day, there are links around the world for men to come forward to share their stories as well. So the process to me is amazing, Stuart, that it's unfolded in that way. It's incredible to where the level it is now. We have had speakers from the United Kingdom, from Germany, from the United States, all across Canada at our international conferences who had had to hide their voice. So I'm thrilled that the programming has evolved the way it has.
Beautiful.
And it's beautiful because Nicola and I right now, speaking of evolution, we're doing a co-ed program, which initially would have been done separately.
Yeah.
You know, women on this side, men on that side, like a friggin' high school dance, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And to me, it's just like this has been an incredible experience. I can't speak obviously for Nicola, but it's been an incredible experience being able to do it at the phase one level. For me, it was anyway, because I think about when I went in and the stigmas that were behind that, being a male, and you know, and even then when I started, well, there was, you know, the women's night was Tuesday night and the men's night was Wednesday night, right?
Yeah.
And not that there was anything wrong with that, but that's just the way it was, and that's just the way things were. But now it's evolved to that. So, and 23 years to go from no, you can't have men to yes, you have men, and now we're together, working together as a team to help each other out. So I think that's pretty incredible. I think that's incredible.
Absolutely, I agree. Because I know, having gone through phase one group and with several participants now, some women are very anti going into a group with males. And some people say, oh, I don't want to go into phase two because it's with males and that's going to trigger me. And I'm like, well, if it's triggering you, then that's kind of what you need to work on, right?
Because
your brain's ready to deal with it. It's interesting to see the difference between a co-ed group with both male and female to a group with just the females.
Yeah, or males.
And maybe that's the vulnerability level. I don't know. It's interesting, but how brave they are to show up like that.
Oh.
Especially if they haven't voiced it before. That's incredible to be that brave, especially when, you know, they may be triggered by a male or a female, right? Because that was their perpetrator. So I find it really interesting and how different the dynamics are in that space.
It's a really neat thing about Karen and I were talking a little while ago about we spend a lot of time in the woods and so on, and how you build a fire in the woods. And sometimes when you're at a provincial park at night and you're walking around and you might be in a car camping area, we tend to go canoe into the backwoods. And I know Stu...
I do the same thing, give it a chance,
So, but what sometimes it's really fun to see is people will put a huge big, some big logs in the fire pit and then spray some oil on it and throw a match and boom, flames come up, but they only last for about 30 seconds. And so, and we'll be over at our fire pit working on our fire, and I'm stripping off the smallest fibers of birch bark and this kind of idea, right? And just sort of gently then the flames kind of get a little bit bigger and a little bit more and a little bit more. And to me, that's kind of a metaphor around, and then it gets warm. Mm-hmm. And you get to sit around this fire. And it's pretty hard not to sit and do two things sort of in sequence. Meditate on the flames. You're looking at the flames, but you're also listening to the persons around the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Storytelling that goes back forever in civilization, sitting around a fire telling the story. And so at the gatehouse, the intention was in the very beginning is the phrase we often would use is like, if you want to move fast, move slow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a Tai Chi expression.
Mm-hmm.
And treat big things in small ways. So it's a really big thing to tell your story. But let's treat it small. Let's start off really, really gentle. So we had the men's group and the women's group. I remember the first, I believe, Stuart, you might have been there, that very first co-ed night.
Yes, I was.
There you go.
Mm.
And what happened in that particular evening was, it just the way it started out, we're meeting at the room at the college, Humber College. And on that occasion, that first night, it just happened that as people were coming in, there were about seven or eight men sitting there, and the first of the women was showing up. And I remember she came to the threshold of the room, and she froze. She stopped at the threshold. And I looked over, and she looked over at me, and there was like just a look. And someone, I don't know who it was now, in the group said, "Oh, it's so good you're here. Come on in." And she came in and sat down, and then other women, eventually everybody showed up. So there was men and women, as you well know, Stuart, and we did this, the process that we do in that. And at the end of the evening, the person who had said to the other person, "Come on in," the evening's ended, and they're sitting there, and they're talking, and they're laughing. And we're talking about some of the most challenging things a human being can go through, but that's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just, again, in awe of when people find their strength to move past the fears, right? Because many of the fears are somewhat illusionary. And so we want to really be able to push through that veil, if you will, and be our authentic selves. And that's what happened in that. And it's been growing ever since. That was the first, as I understand it, you were involved then, Stuart, in the very first co-ed group in Canadian history in that context, talking about childhood sexual abuse. That's an amazing thing that you did by being, because it wouldn't, those things don't happen if people don't participate, if people aren't willing to push through their fears to be in that setting. Because one of the things that happened that night, I remember, is men talking about their fears. And the women were, and talking about women who were strong. And that was like really a different kind of conversation in that context. And everybody ultimately connecting through their vulnerability. Every single one of the people in that room that night connected with each other by being vulnerable. And at the gatehouse, we often say, as you well know, you're at your strongest when you're most vulnerable. That's when you're really strong.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I remember about that first time at the co-ed group.
Yeah, that was an awesome experience. I still remember that to this day, pretty much. And I still have all the paperwork from it. I kept it all. I keep everything that I've been involved with at the gatehouse. I keep it all. And I've shown my kids this in the past too. So, but still, it's good for people that are interested. I can show them, well, this is what's gone on since from here to there. But,
yeah.
But nevertheless, excuse me. Nevertheless, after partaking in that program and the time that I've spent there now, I've had the pleasure and privilege to be able to co-facilitate the phase two, the exact same group that you designed. And it's still going today. And I've done many groups. I don't know how many now, but I've done lots. But the point being is It's beautiful how it's grown and evolved, mm-hmm. and it's been massaged a little bit, but other than that, it's still a beautiful program from right from the beginning, mm-hmm. when you started it, to today being used. And I always enjoy doing the phase. You know, people often ask me, usually people in the gatehouse office have asked me, well, what's your favorite one to do, the phase one or the phase two? Well, you know, to be honest with you, I really like them all. I've been really, really fortunate to be able to partake in the phase one and the phase two program, and also the partner program, so and a few other things. So I can't really say I have a favorite. I really do enjoy, given the opportunity, I would do any one of them without even thinking about it. And I won't pick one over the other one, that's for sure.
But they all serve a purpose, but in a different way, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
You know, phase one obviously is finding your voice, and then phase two is more growth, more about story.
Mm-hmm.
And then partners program is about relationships. So everyone is so uniquely different, but needed at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, thank you, Arthur, for setting this up, because honestly, I wouldn't be the person I am today if it wasn't for the gatehouse. I mean, I came in a different energy, feeling that I was completely healed. However, it's like you said, it was only yesterday you said to me, you're more confident than you were back then. And I'm like, and I am aware of that, but it was through the work of the gatehouse and, bless its soul, the drop-in group was where I found my confidence. And honestly, I mean, it humbles me to this day. I couldn't have done what I do now for work. I could not have stood up in the front of a class of 30-odd people and done a yoga class. I didn't have that confidence.
Yeah.
I could meet people, because like before I was doing sales and different things, I could meet people over the telephone and I had confidence. But as soon as I met them face to face, that little shy thing came out again. And I wasn't the person that I was, and you see it more than anyone else. But like, there was no way I could have done anything like this, like nothing like this at all. I could not have spoken at colleges, universities, could not have done any of that. So, so again, thank you so much, Maria, R, and everyone that facilitates at the Gatehouse, because honestly, it is truly very special. It really is.
And I think about the facilitators, about you folks being facilitators, and how counter that is to so many approaches to dealing with traumas, and that by being able to, you know, kind of climb down into our darkest fears and then kind of come back out of that, and being willing to say, now that I've done that, I would like to pass a rope to somebody else to help pull mm-hmm. them along, or stabilize it as they pull themselves along, is quite extraordinary, you know, because
mm-hmm.
And people have every right, and they go, they've been there, they've been helped, and they're feeling great, and they move along, and that's beautiful. And but to stay and say, I'm going to now turn around and extend my hand to another human being
mm-hmm.
in a way that allows their story to come out, that is so very, very powerful. And it's something I think that ought to be talked about on a planetary level. This capacity that we all have, it's there. It just kind of gets layered over, right?
Like
you, as you said, Nicola, exactly mm-hmm. how you expressed it. And then, but once you get rid of it, like this super giant emotional weight loss program, then it's gone, right?
Like, yes.
I remember one fellow talking about, you referred to it as a weight loss program. He said, I lost 500 pounds. And I said, what, you've never meant 500 pounds? And he said, yeah, there was this great, huge, giant monster on my back. He must have been at least 500 pounds, and he's not there anymore. And this fellow who said that, he was, actually, he was 72 years old.
Wow.
And, yeah, and he said to me on this occasion, you know, I've been carrying that monster on my back since I was 66 years, right?
Mm.
And this was the end of one of the cycles of the group that we were involved in. So it was, we had a celebratory night and so on. And for him to come up and say that, and it was a very emotional, very moving moment, And then for him to use humor in that way, to be able to look back and then be able to laugh, to have a smile on their faces now after all the trauma we go through,
absolutely.
That's a really healthy sign of people moving forward and healing and so on. But it wouldn't happen in the way it does if it wasn't for you guys. I think that's where the magic lives in the gatehouse is it's the people who've gone through their traumas, and you don't. Not everyone has to go through trauma to be a good facilitator, that kind of thing. But in the main, to know that there's a space for you as a facilitator, if you so choose, is it's a real gift that people bring when they decide, yes, I would like to do that. Because I've heard facilitators say, too, they keep on learning. Like, it just doesn't stop.
Absolutely.
Like, now you see the other layers. And so that's a wonderful thing as well.
And the beauty of it is you really don't have to say very much. You're just holding space. So you're like, okay. they're really doing the group. You're just kind of sitting there and just, okay, we're just, like, going around the circle.
I think what we say there, too, right, at the gatehouse, and we ought to somehow print up these little statements that we have that is real facilitation, and I mean what you guys do. The facilitation that you do, to me, is kind of like the art of doing nothing but doing it really well and making it look like you're not doing anything. But then all this stuff is happening, right? All this tightness is kind of loosening up, all this fear is kind of sliding back, and you're just kind of allowing it to move, right? So that a person can finally speak. There was a fellow who became a facilitator. The first 6 weeks of his time as a group member, he didn't say a word. And the group was getting a little bit upset with him that, you know, you got to say something, like make him say something. And there just was, he's there. He's there, he's listening. He's just taking it in a different way, and he becomes a facilitator.
Yep.
Think of that's kind of amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's incredible actually to watch that. I've seen that too, even myself, from people going, men and women both coming through the house over the years, and it's always astonishing to see. You know, you come in, they come in as the quiet one, and all of a sudden they're you know, they're leading the pack, right?
The transformation is beautiful, even if it's baby steps from that 15, 16 weeks, phase one or phase two, even if you see a very small movement, it's still movement, but people only express, I don't know, a fifth, a tenth of what is actually going on up here. Mm. So knowing that even if they're not really saying very much, that when you actually ask them, like towards the end of group, of that 2 hours, so what did you get out of this week? When they express that, it's far deeper than even we realize. It's huge. It really is huge.
What I like the best about the phase two connection, about having both sexes there, is that I felt it very, very, it was so important for me to listen to the other side to help myself heal, because I didn't understand on some things. I just did not understand. And the only way I'm going to figure that out is I need to hear from a woman's point of view, because they understand feelings and thoughts better than men, most men do. So I needed that there to help me to move along. So so I'm grateful for that in that aspect. And now we've incorporated into the phase one. I think that will help perpetuate that connection sooner for men that are having that trouble making connections with some of those feelings, because they're able to explain those feelings, I think, better than what men can and understand. So I value them being there for their input and being able to help. Well, it helped me, so I can't see why I wouldn't help anybody else with the same process I just described. So so I say bravo. I wish that had been sooner, right? Because it might have sped me up a little bit more in my healing. I have no idea. I can't project that. But hypothetically speaking, it could have done that if I hadn't been able to get into that sort of process sooner versus later. You know, but I'm still grateful the way it all turned out, nevertheless.
Oh, amazing.
One of the small things that I like, which again I learned at the gatehouse, was not handing anyone a tissue. Like, if you're crying, then let those tears out, because that's where the really good healing starts.
Yeah.
But like for men too, especially, because you know women, we're allowed to be emotional, and we kind of always have been. But with men, it's kind of pushed down in society. And I just love how if a man cries in the group, it's celebrated and it's encouraged. It's not, oh, here's a tissue, shut up, right? When we're trying to let that voice out. But it's actually encouraged. And I find that that's just so strong and so beautiful to just witness. And hold that space for them to just let that crap out. I mean, because it is crap, right? And it's letting that energy out of the body because it's been stuck there for so long. And it's just beautiful to, you know, be in that space when people are so emotional and just allow it to be. Just allow that stuff to just dissipate. And the following week, the beauty of seeing that transformation is like, okay, so next week they're going to be different because you've seen it a few times now. And then when they show up, it's like, ah, there it is. There's that spirit climbing up the ladder. But it's just it's just an honor to be part of that process. It's just beautiful.
I like what you say about the tears because tears really, it's like, there's more than one way to tell a story, right? When one can say it with their voice. If someone doesn't physically have a voice, they're mute. Well, we can do sign. And when somebody cries, that's simply another way of having a conversation and watching the tears roll down somebody's cheek. And really, like, I wonder how you said that, Nicole, because it's like embracing it, like, having a container that says, let it go, you know, like just pour it all out. And if, and conversely, if somebody needs to scream, you know, or upset about something, then you just say, again, in that notion of doing nothing is keep screaming. You've got to have more in there, I'm pretty sure. And somebody, I remember one fellow one night, and I said, that's it. That's the yell. And we started a bit laughing about it. So we went outside, walked down the stairs. It was on break time. We came down the stairs. We went out into the out air, and he just went, and I said, 1, 2, 3, and we both just screamed really, really loud, right? And it was just so fun, like the old primal scream kind of idea. But it was just the notion that in that space that you people create as facilitators, stuff that we've been holding for so long, like it tires you out. And so that you can just say, oh, I guess I better put this over here for forever and put it over there now because I've got to move on, right? And so it's wonderful how you're expressing that about tears. And it is a form of conversation without question.
Absolutely.
So in light of the pandemic now, and people's thoughts and perceptions of mental health are starting to change in regards to how we look after how we look after ourselves. Do you see that? How do you foresee the future now in regards to mental health? And well, the gatehouse is just one part of it, but as a whole, do you see it improving now? Not just getting funding, but getting other sources of support. To help us do our job, what we do at the house now. Do you see that improving overall as a whole?
I sure hope so. But there certainly is an amazing amount of discussion around, for example, and I'll bring it right back to your question about like how we approach mental health, right? What we need to do and who needs to be part of it. So it's inescapable to think about in the last year. It's just the other day was 1 year anniversary of the killing of George Floyd. And that was like a watershed moment. And many people talked about things like we have to defund the police as an example. And because if we think about in that incident with that particular case where he was yelling out, I'm claustrophobic, or I have COVID, or whatever he was yelling out, it was talking about a fear, and maybe he had some kind of legitimate an illness. But the response was a retributive, violent response, a militarized response to somebody who was suffering. We see that in our streets around the country of Canada, where we get a call about a wellness check or a mental health issue, and militarized police people show up to deal with that. My thinking is that we ought to consider looking at these issues of trauma and mental health from a relational framework, not a criminal framework.
Mm-hmm.
That, as I mentioned all the way back talking about the first men's group at the gatehouse, that response to, no, we can't have men in here, was a criminal lens. They were looking at it through a criminal lens about abuse. And as opposed to saying, what's the well-being of this other individual? How do we help another person who's in trauma, who's been victimized by terrible things? So I believe that mental health is really to be at the top concern. It's a human concern. It's human health that we're talking about, a whole person health. And so that we need to take away the stigma of when the person has been abused as a child, it's not uncommon for the child to think it was their fault. It's not uncommon for the person who's been sexually abused to think, what did I do wrong? Why was it me that this person did this to? And we want to figure out, why would somebody think that in the first place? They think that in the first place because culturally we've built a whole taboo around being sexually harmed.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that people will even say things like, they're connected to the person who harmed them in such a way that if the person is charged, that they're wondering how long this person is going to get. So if the person gets 6 months versus 6 years, I've had people sit across from me and say they still feel empty. The conviction didn't change anything inside of them. They say things like they wanted to talk about their feelings. And so what's happened, I think, is a lot of times we take things, put them in a criminal framework, mental health issues, as opposed to saying, this isn't just a person who's a victim. They've been victimized. They're a whole person. They're not a victim. They've been victimized. There's a big difference in my view, and this would be a whole other discussion one day, I think. What I'm trying to say is we have to look at things through a community wellness, well-being scenario. We have to do that. We can't just look at it as you've been harmed and we're going to get this person and convict them and therefore you will be okay again. No. People who, it doesn't work like that. So we have to have attention on people who have been victimized in such a way that they can get stronger. There ought not to be a taboo about coming forward to say, I've been harmed. And I guess I would say that what the gatehouse and people connected to the gatehouse have been incredible about is doing that kind of, having that kind of conversation. For example, we have a person connected to the gatehouse named Charmaine Lovren.
Mm.
And she is an amazing human being. She's been advocating to have legislation in the province of Ontario, which I think should be worldwide, but in the province of Ontario, to have processes throughout the educational system for children to be able to come forward to say, I think this is happening. Because oftentimes kids may not even know
mm-hmm.
in the way they've been so manipulated as we know these stories. So that there's a process for children to come forward to talk from a mental health perspective about what they're experiencing. How many times in our lifetime, as people who've been harmed, did we hold it back? How many years, how many days, minutes, seconds did we hold it back because somehow we thought it still was part of our fault? Like somehow we made this happen. But if I wouldn't feel like that if my arm was broken. I wouldn't say, shh, I'd not tell somebody your arm is broken, but just, you know, forget about your broken arm. So I think the same thing here. It's like I've been sexually, something's gone off sexually, somebody did something to me. Okay, let's have a conversation about that, as opposed to that couldn't happen. And no, we don't talk about that here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you've hit on a powerful, powerful issue, Stuart. We have to stop just responding to this in terms of a lens of retributive responses to the trauma. We have to start looking at, yes, people have to be removed, yes, people have to be dealt with who have done harm. I'm not absolutely, you've got to do these things, but how do we do that? How do we create a process so a child can say out loud, I'm being harmed, and somebody doesn't say, well, that's just not possible. So that's kind of, I'm hoping we can get there someday. Like, I really hope we work on that really hard to look at this as a mental health issue, and also not just an individual mental health issue, but a community health issue. It's the community that's experiencing all of this. And so how do we go about dealing with that? And that's why the gatehouse, you think about that little tiny house, something like 20,000 plus people have been affected by that house, by you, by Nicola, by you, Stuart, like every people such as you. And you didn't do it by saying this is an offender or this is the victim. Like, you're looking at it, this is a human being who has been harmed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to look at. This person's been harmed. What's the trauma that they're experiencing? What are the processes that we allow to have that, their well-being, their mental health well-being attended to, as opposed to pushing them into a process that immediately, to my way of thinking, makes it at times even more difficult. So, and I know there's a lot in there, that a lot of the nuances, and I'm sure people might even be upset with some of the things I'm even saying on this kind of thing, because we tend, when people have been harmed, like, give an example. I used to take students out with me on the streets of Toronto. They had to stay out with me all night. And we would stay at a church basement in downtown Toronto, but we would be out until 2 or 3 in the morning, and then we came and they slept in sleeping bags there. And that all began when a student said, people that are panhandling on the street make so much money. They have it so good out there on the street, making all this money panhandling. And I said, oh, that's pretty good. I guess, you know, we don't need to go to school anymore. I'll pay my mortgage. This is fantastic news. So I took people out on the street to meet the people on the street. That's the work I used to do. Overwhelmingly, I don't know, 90%. It probably would have been 100, but if we did that formal academic rigorous study, overwhelmingly the people living on the street had a story of that somewhere in their lives have been harmed sexually, physically, emotionally. They're on the street, they're panhandling, people are yelling at them, spitting at them, they're being given tickets for being on the street. The whole Safe Streets Act about people being on the streets. So we're criminalizing people whose start point to get out on the street in the first place was being victimized, not most common, in place by people they know. We have to figure out how to do mental health for the whole community. Why is it that that person is on the street? Why is it that the child doesn't say anything in class? Why is it that they seem to be in the state that they're in? We have to find a way for them to feel that it's safe and normal to talk about trauma. So mental health, Stuart, absolutely. I really applaud you for bringing that up.
Thank you. And I think the biggest thing is that I see, and it's only too common, well, I shouldn't say it's only too common, but what I see, which is very plain view to me, is I think the agencies are not working. I'm not going to get into a long, drawn-out conversation about this because we could talk for hours about this. But
yeah.
But a point I want to make is I just wish the community, the agencies that are out there doing this stuff would come together and talk together more, mm-hmm. and work together more. And some of these things would actually change or just overnight,
yeah.
just from doing the obvious things, I would think, but they don't do that. And I don't understand that. And even through this pandemic, that hasn't even happened. Everybody is in their own agency, their own doing their own thing, and only some of them are actually working together, and the rest of them are on their own doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know what's beautiful about talking with people like you two? Like, you evoke so many thoughts. My brain is bouncing all over the place.
Yeah.
Commentary. But that somewhere along the line, those, when you say that different organizations stay in their own organizations, good Lord, I've been involved in the system, educational criminal justice system, formally for 43 years. So been involved in a lot of different scenarios. And when you mention that separateness, oftentimes our language was silos. Everybody's operating in their own silo. And then the discussion would be eventually is about money. That each agency is looking, each organization, each municipal police force, each whatever you want to say is an issue about funding. Even if we talked about, and I'm not sure that that's the right language to say defund the police. I think that I'd be more in line with how do we transform roles in policing. And so it's not just about defunding and taking away money from somebody.
New transformation.
Mm-hmm.
New transformation.
Yeah, a new transformation, really, truly.
Yeah.
And so that there is money out there. If we, for example, thought at the beginning of the gatehouse, I give exactly this story. When I went to find out about opening the gate, who owned the gatehouse, found that it was owned by the City of Toronto. Went to the City of Toronto, said, I phoned them. I said, can I have that house that nobody's used for over 30 years and the roof is falling in, it's all falling apart, can I have it? That person was sort of, I'm paraphrasing, I'm kidding. And I'd like to have it, please, and I'll fix it up. Well, no, we don't do things like that. And that was the response. And so I phoned back and eventually got a meeting with them and all this. And so one thing led to another, and it came up with, well, I could strike a lease with the city for $300,000 to rebuild it and put my cost against it. And as I've told you, Stuart, in the early days, that I was short exactly
$299,000. Yeah.
Yeah. So the whole thing about it, why I'm bringing that up is, has the mentality been from the group of people that started at the beginning was, we don't have the money for this. We don't. Who has $300,000? And I came home and told Karen I signed a lease for $300,000. She looked at me and said, oh, we're going on one of those journeys again. The idea is, if we could just put money over to the side and not say we don't get it, everybody can benefit by having money, obviously. But so often in the silos, it's about protecting the money more than it is about the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that takes a lot of energy to protect the money. And so what if we all got together, and when I say all of us, like the school boards, the police organizations, the hospitals, community agencies, such as a gatehouse, and they sat at round tables, and they talked about how do we share some of our funding, how do we share some of our resources. You guys are living, breathing human resource, beautiful people, that you're doing this work at the gatehouse. How did that happen? You must be making, what, $500,000 an hour there, working there.
Or, yeah, $650,000 I thought.
So how is that possible? And you're doing really amazing work. So there are ways to do this if we really believe in that we're all connected. The problem, I think, lies in the fact that we don't. This is my area. I'm not going to, I reluctantly share something, right? And much is made of when maybe a very wealthy person might give, you know, $1,000 or $1 million to something. But when you add up the amount, it comes out of them, it's like $50.
Or yeah.
You know, like, so, and I'm not being angry at any wealthy person giving money. I'm not, that's not my point. The point is, I believe there's more than enough wealth out there. It's just guarded. So that we could be finding ways to share it.
Absolutely.
If we look at it communally. I really believe that. And I could, there's research and cost breakdowns about the difference between, and a lot of things about community safety, how we could reallocate our money and feel safer than we've ever felt. And so I think that if we say it's a mental well-being scenario that we're talking about, a community well-being that we're talking about, let's get everybody in the room and let's share. There's no, quite honestly, the Gatehouse is connected to the campus grounds of Humber College. But even at times there, there has been struggles to get a room. Like, how is that possible? Yes, there have been people at Humber College that have been very, very good and kind and supportive financially to the Gatehouse. But is it still going on? No, there's always this struggle, this asking for, as opposed to somebody coming in and saying, by the way, I've got a building with 3,500 rooms. You guys could probably use one, right? I never had that said to us at the Gatehouse. We went and said, can we have a room? The people with the money and the wealth don't necessarily walk around saying, here, I guess you guys could use another, you know, whatever amount of money, or how about a brand new computer, or how about... It seems the other way around. So if we had a lens of transformative social change all the time, or how do we relate to each other with dignity, grace, and care, what do we have to do on a day-to-day basis to engage with another human being so they are enabled to have their capacity nurtured in such a way that they have ennoblement, like dignity. So engagement, enablement, ennoblement. That's what I believe that, honestly, Nicola, Stuart, like you, of course, the woman behind the scenes there doing all the technical pieces of this day, Maria, you are doing that work. You are wonderful, wonderful. I know I've said that, but honestly, wonderful human beings, gift-giving human beings. You're doing that because you're doing it. You don't say, I need all this money to make it happen. Yes, money is helpful, but no doubt about that. People working at the Gatehouse that are working there full-time, they deserve good quality funding, no doubt about that, none whatsoever. But the fact that they have to go through the hurdles that they do, questions, why do they have to go through those hurdles when there is more than enough money in our country to support them, more than enough.
Absolutely.
And I could use example after example of where money has gone out the door and think, how did that even happen?
Yeah. Right?
So,
just a crazy, crazy waste. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think people need to kind of hear this at the same time, and it's important because it is a social issue. But I'll leave it at that. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. And I think I'll leave you with one more question before we finish off the day. And, okay, well, we talked about 25 years is coming up. So do you have any thoughts or perceptions of how you would like it to go to we get to our 25th? And if so, what would they be if you're willing to share?
One of the ones, I was just actually talking with the board of directors last night, about the Gatehouse, is when the pandemic was unfolding, a couple of universities down in the States that are in the literary departments got together a song called Global Poetry for the Pandemic, and they had people from around the world sending in poems about their response and experience with the pandemic, with the virus. It got me thinking that could the Gatehouse do similar thing around poetry, storytelling related to transforming my transformative relationship to trauma? How did I work my way through? What's my experience in working through the trauma? And we collect these poems and short stories from people around the world, and we knit it together, and it's a centerpiece for the upcoming conference in the fall, for the Gatehouse Conference. But we keep on building it. We keep on making connections with people from all over the world. So when I looked at that website, they have a poem from somebody in North York, Toronto, and somebody from Milan, Italy. The same thing we could do with the Gatehouse. I know there's a lot of work that would be involved in this, but I think we would be connected. We would be the facilitators on a planetary level for people's voices. Some little child living in some small town in northern Ontario gets to write a poem about their experience. So that's one of the things I hope we can build on and get people involved in it. And I'll give a very, as I close that statement, I saw an email the other day, and it was about you and Nicola, and it was about your involvement with the World Health Organization. Now think about this for a second. The World Health Organization somehow connected with you folks at the Gatehouse. And some of the stories are going to be part of that film that they're making. So why don't we do the same thing about poems and short stories and reach out around the world, that people can do that as well, and that it becomes like a quilt? Maybe to extend the metaphor, it's cool that candles are on the planet. Right? It makes you feel warm and safe because now I can tell my story. Being able to tell your story is, well, I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty powerful to be able to tell your story. And so that's what I'm hoping we do. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys.
It sure does. It certainly does. And I like your core of using it as like a quilt, because it kind of is, because you got stories from every part of the world. It's going to be like a giant quilt.
Why the heck not, right?
Anyway, what I want to do, first off, is I want to thank you for coming on here today and giving your time. Nicola, too. Maria, thank you for producing the show. And I really have to thank Maria, Paula, for kind of getting me going on this podcast thing, because if it hadn't them nudging me to do this, I never would have done that. So I want to just thank you, Maria. Are you there? Why don't you come on and say hi before we go by? That's all right. Here we go.
And I don't think Maria nudges anybody. It's either or.
Oh, we have missed.
We can't hear you.
You're silent.
Hello. Sorry. I have an all or nothing comment to distortion wave. So it's either 0 or 100. And when Stuart said radio show, I was like, yes.
It's funny how you say that about Maria, because I've had that a few times where she says something. It's like, oh, why don't you do this? And all of a sudden it's public. And I'm like, oh, I guess that is public now. So, you know, what? Hey, hello from it. And I just, you know, put these things together.
I wanted to make a comment on what Arthur said about, you know, agencies maybe not working together or the different silos and stuff. It just seems that the Gatehouse, when there's an idea by a volunteer or facilitator who may need funding for certain things, but we find other ways to collaborate and partner. I actually have a meeting in about an hour with someone from the police to talk about a potential collaboration. So we're reaching out to different agencies, because we cannot do this alone. We just can't.
No.
We could, but it won't work the same way as if you did it with community, with more people involved with different ideas. This is how we like shift our ideas anyway, like our perspectives. If we just keep the same thing, we're just repeating history. So
Absolutely.
There's a wonderful author,
All right.
I have to. So this hour seems like 20 seconds to me. You know, you guys, facilitators. but one of the things is that the more Ramu Wright wrote a book called Stolen Continents, and in that he talks about the idea that if we don't pay attention to history, we keep on repeating it, except it gets more extensive.
Mm.
And so I think that if we did really have collaboration, there is more than enough out there that we could feed the world. But, and I'm not trying to sound like I'm a little kid saying, you know, that kind of stuff. Really, we can do this. And the only thing that stops us is ourselves, that we just say, well, we can't. So, Maria, it's beautiful that you're collaborating today, hopefully with the police and whatever that you get going. We have to be relentless about that. Collaboration, mm-hmm. community building. And if you look at any conflict in our lives, it has qualities of disconnection, isolation, darkness. That's what it has. Nothing, not a living any organism on the planet needs some other aspect of the planet to survive. A plant needs to breathe. Mm-hmm. We need to breathe. Mm-hmm. No air, we don't breathe. Nobody does anything wrong. But our culture seems to be thinking, oh, yes, you have to be an individualistic, go out there and do it by yourself. It's an illusion. No one has ever done anything by themselves. Mm-hmm. We always do it in collaboration. So let's celebrate that. Let's figure out a way that we're all in this together. And I remember somebody saying to me, I said, I just wanted to share this with you, that this agency, it'd be great. You guys could come over and use the space at the gatehouse if you need it. And the person says, what's your agenda? And I said, I just said it. They thought they had a stereo mode out, like, you know. It's like, wow, you know, come on. Like, we've got this. So my last comment to you is, so the three of you here right now, is in the language when people talk about loving the world and loving people, I just want to say that you create that feeling for people. You really do. You create a place that's so safe that people can come in and in that safety be themselves. Imagine that, eh? Getting to be yourself. No putting on fancy airs, nothing. Just be yourself. And you do that. I'm so grateful that we've somehow our paths have entwined and we're there and we'll always be there. I'm just so grateful. So thank you to you guys. I really, really thank you.
Thank you, too.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for your perseverance when you don't like the word no, obviously. So thank you for your perseverance with everything throughout the years.
I used to say that when somebody would say, well, I don't think you can, we'd always say, well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And one more thank you I want to thank, too, is I want to thank the staff, meaning, well, obviously, Art, Maria, Paula, and Stephanie, and I have to include Brad on this because Brad's been involved in this journey the whole time. So, but anyway, I just wanted to say that too as well before we finish off.
Absolutely, for sure.
They sure are. Mm. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you for inviting me on today. I'm really very grateful. Have a beautiful day, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. And you too. Bye now.
Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you, Brad. Bye-bye.
Now we're gone, right?
Yeah. Now you have to get ready. 3D, we get a chance to do our announcements.
Oh, well. We did it.
Yeah.
So it's not that we have to turn it. I'll
sign out. Bill's home. Okay. You don't need this, do you?
No.
Oops.